Gene.
I'm Gene Crome, the fellow who's doing some of the research related to Berkman Center and LexisNexis, and part of what we're looking at doing is perhaps having some recommendations of how would you bring the gap between practice and law schools closely together, more closely together. And, you know, you might imagine that we'd come up with some specific recommendations, like maybe our clinical programs should use the same software that that you use in law firms when you're handling your cases. But it seems to me answering those questions on a kind of individual skill by skill basis is just going to be an answer for 2 years, and then suddenly the technology moves on and you're back to where you are now again. Do you have any thoughts on how we can permanently or more systemically bridge the gap between practice and law? And is that something that technology can help us with? Is there some way to bring the practices of law in the real world together with academia together in a more tightly knit way so that we don't constantly have this conversation every 2, 3, 5 years whenever we fall out of sync again?
I'll take a stab
at it. You.
I'm reminded of about a month and a half ago I was flying from Tokyo to New York, and they had this program. Japan Airlines was offering this program, and the program was that for free you could work on the internet while you were sitting there in your seat. So I got up and turned on my computer, got up on the internet, and the guy next to me kind of looked over and he said, "Hey, you know, my name is so and so, and I happen to live." And anyway, we started talking, and he happened to live in the same town that I did. And so I was there on the internet, and he couldn't quite see my computer. So I typed in his name and where he lived, Google. And up came kind of his picture and the whole story of his life and everything else. And I had this odd feeling where I knew what he was going to say next. And, you know, I didn't know whether it would be polite to say, "Well, I know that you just sold Grey Goose Vodka," which I'm now kind of exposed his name, I suppose. I shouldn't have done that. But anyway. sure enough, he said, "I just, you know, bought a home, and I just, I own Grey Goose Goop Vodka," and I had this odd sensation where I was ahead of it, you know, from this whole conversation, because I could figure out pretty well what he was doing. And I suppose, and I'm not sure where I'm going in this conversation, other than realizing that the world is a different place. And this whole business of how it is that you actually conduct practice of law, and I just realized that somebody can actually go up there and figure out who this guy was that I was seated next to. the practice of law is dramatically different than it was just a little while ago. When I go to China or Russia, and I ask lawyers, "Well, what is it that you really need that you today don't have?" Thinking, well, maybe they're going to talk about torts or civil procedure, you know, or something, you know, like that. I mean, what they say is, what I really want to know is when a client comes walking in the door, I want to know who they are, because they introduce themselves, and I'm Sergey Fedorov or whatever I am. You know, I want to know who this guy really is, and I want to know what assets does he own, and I want to know what kind of criminal record does he have. And these are things that that I need to know in today's world. So I'm not sure exactly what the question was that brought all this out of me,
the question was whether we have any insight into how we could better connect the law school education with the practice. Law school education has become increasingly academized in the last 40 years, to a point now where, you know, it's PhDs rather than practitioners that are the models. And there's a feeling that there's a gap that's too large between legal education and the experience and practice. And the question is, do we have any concluding thoughts, and this would be a nice way to bring this to a close, do we have any concluding thoughts, just insights, suggestions, lines of thought that would allow us to integrate better the teaching and the profession?
You know, I think, I'm sorry.
Well, what I would offer, I guess, and this kind of goes back to the 1992 McCrae report, and where they said the idea of the gap is a false image, that it's a continuum, that we're along. And what I would suggest is that there is a group continuum and then there's an individual continuum. So the law school is the beginning of that. And I think in some ways law firms took a greater responsibility in the past for the education, and were more accepting of that responsibility than they may be today. And so I think there's a conversation that needs to take place about who's obligated to do what. You want us to create critical thinkers, we will do that. Then you have obligations once they arrive. But I think there's a group continuum that we have to look at as well. And there are slopes and there are vertical cliffs along that continuum. And we as a society are facing a vertical cliff of technology that we're all climbing. And I think we have to accept that a little bit. And you can't just say to law schools, hey, we're all struggling with this. Why don't you do something about it? I think we have to accept that we're on a continuum together. That would be my thought.
You know, I was going to say, and I know I've been the naysayer all night, that in a way the technology is a non-starter. I mean, I would argue in any practice, you know, grasping the technology is a necessary but hardly sufficient skill to being a good practicing lawyer. You know, I don't really care to a large extent how somebody uses technology as long as they get to the point, the answer, the result they need to get to, whether that means you sit there with your laptop and you study it or you put technology aside. Where I think the biggest gap is between practicing and education is in the daily pressures that are put on lawyers that you don't face in law school. And those pressures, to a large extent, unfortunately, are technology driven. It used to be, we used to run surveys in our firm, we have these partner meetings, and we'd say, okay, if a client leaves you a voicemail, this was years ago, you know, what's the acceptable time frame to call him or her back? And it used to be 3 days. A few years ago, it became a day. You know, I now get, when I turn my BlackBerry back on, as soon as we turn off the mics, there's going to be 8 or 10 emails from clients. And they're going to be saying, where have you been for the last hour and a half? Because if you don't return an email in 10 or 15 minutes, they think something's wrong. That is an incredible pressure that the technology has put on us. And if you can't manage that pressure and manage your time, you're not going to be successful, no matter how well you understand the technology, no matter how smart you are, no matter how well you can have that civil discourse with your professor in a law school class. And I think that's the skill gap, and it's managing the technology in your life and in your profession that really will dictate how you live your life and how the profession evolves over the next 10, 15, 20, 30 years.
A yay-sayer final moment? I think we're right in the verge of an explosion of capability. The Second Life virtual world is an example of it. The networks of peer-to-peer networks in so many different iterations throughout our society are others examples of it. And it seems to me we have the capability with that rich simulation environment to bring into our classrooms and into our legal education process very realistic images of what it's like to practice law, what it's like to solve client problems, and to do that in rich, strategic, complicated settings. And what the challenge is to bring into that process, into that simulation process, into our classrooms, the tools that are being used by actual lawyers in the world today, so that when they walk into John's law firm, it's easy for them to make that transition because they don't have to learn anything. They've been using the tools in this rich simulation that draws them into the client-centered problem-solving environment that law practice is.
I think that sounds like a really promising approach. I think the only thing I would add is when you're trying to figure out where to shoot all that firepower, look at challenges that are recognized in the field of practice that the people in law schools really think they have something to offer. Because I think there's a lot of work that goes on in law firms that nobody in law schools wants to help prepare people to deal with. And there's a lot of work that probably should go on in law schools that isn't going to be directly applicable to the field of practice. So look for the intersection and then shoot your bazooka full of all those fancy tools at it.
Sandy?
I guess I see, in addition to the management, I think that there is hierarchies of information. And I think that that's going to be also, there's so much available, people are going to have to be able to make decisions about the value of various kinds of information. So we're talking about blogs or peer-to-peer discussion groups, and so that there's this richness in the world of all of these sources, but not all of the sources are equal. And so I think another challenge that you will face as practicing lawyers is to determine the relative value of all of these sources and then how you use them.
And Andy, you get to say the benediction.
Well, I think you said something about either pragmatic or cynical, I think is the word you use. And actually, I'm on the other side of the fence on that particular question, though maybe you may not realize that. I really learned a lot today. I learned a lot better understanding, I think, some of the challenges that you have. And you probably don't have the same amount of latitude that partners in a law firm have, clients have, and that I have as a CEO. You got to work a lot harder than I do, and I don't think I fully appreciate it.
Yeah, it's tough.
You got to win the hearts and souls.
By the time it comes to 4 o'clock Tuesday, I'm ready to kick back.
All I have to do is win the wallets, you know. But you've got to win the hearts and souls. It's a lot tougher job than that. Thank you for reminding me of that.
Well, thank you all very much for participating in our panel. Thank you for coming, and I hope we get a chance to talk afterwards, and we are concluded.